Yeah, I think one thing I did was waffle. I'd start on one point and I just end up somewhere totally different. So sorry about that.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of Dev Brewed. Today we put the business talk to one side and we are focusing purely on Apple, and in particular the WWDC 2019 keynote. Glenn is away this week, so I'm joined by two very special guests. I have Kishan, who is an Android user, currently using a Samsung S10, but he secretly owns an iPad, and Frosty, real name James Frost, who created the theme music for this podcast and is here to help fight the corner of Apple alongside me. Hi guys, are you ready to start?
Yep, let's go.
Let's do it.
So maybe we can start with tvOS. The first thing they did was preview one of their new shows, For All Mankind. What do you think about this?
I thought it looked really good. To be honest, was it back in March with the sort of the TV event? I'm not particularly fond of the idea. I just think there's too many streaming sites. But when they showed this particular trailer, I was quite... It made me want to watch the show, so maybe they're starting to turn me towards that. I'm not sure. It looked great, basically. But I did feel overall the beginning to the conference with starting with TV, you know, sort of going back to what was discussed already back in March, it felt slightly weak to me. But it picked up pretty quickly after that. But as the show itself, it looks really good.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the preview looked really good. Certainly something I'd probably be interested to watch. But yeah, I feel like there are quite a lot of streaming services now, and it's too much to sign up to all of them, as well as your regular Sky or Virgin or wherever as well. So it becomes quite a pricey proposition.
Yeah, I really liked the trailer. I thought the production quality seemed really high, which I was a little bit surprised by. So it seems like they've spent a lot of money, you know, on this one particular show, which out of all the shows hasn't been spoken about that much. So I'm guessing, you know, like the Jennifer Aniston show and some of these other ones are probably going to also look and probably be quite good as well. So I think it's helped people, or given people a bit of confidence that what they are going to release is actually going to not be garbage and might actually be worth a watch.
I think, like everyone, looking forward to, you know, let's look at iOS and stuff, and it straight away it was just like, here's another trailer. I don't know,
I see what you're saying, just get on with the show. So what about the the massive feature of account switching, aka what Netflix already does?
Again, it's not huge news, but that's been a theme for dub for a long time, you know, sort of features that have long existed for other brands or other, you know, bits of software, other companies, but suddenly Apple announces it and it's like, oh, fantastic, you know, finally we got this. Again, just with the tvOS, you know, the sort of the trailers moving as you're sort of scrolling through the home screen. You know, Netflix has done that for over a year now, maybe 2 years, and I don't know, it's just like big deal, you know, come on, show us something we don't already know, you know.
So what about the massive feature of account switching, aka what Netflix already does?
Again, it's not huge news, but that's been a theme for dub for a long time, you know, sort of features that have long existed for other brands or other, you know, bits of software, other companies, but suddenly Apple announces it and it's like, oh, fantastic, you know, finally we got this. Again, just with the tvOS, you know, the sort of the trailers moving as you're sort of scrolling through the home screen. You know, Netflix has done that for over a year now, maybe 2 years, and I don't know, it's just like big deal, you know, come on, show us something we don't already know, you know.
Yeah, I think what I'm hoping this is hinting at is, you know, a future where you can finally switch accounts on an iPad. It wasn't announced today, but maybe in the fall with new hardware, they may make it so that hardware can support multiple users. Some of the stuff they've done, I think, with the phone software and with the HomePod as well, they're now starting to at least recognize that people have more than one person living in a house, which is nice.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Especially, I think, particularly families with kids and things, you know, it makes a lot of sense. Me and my girlfriend watch a lot of the same stuff. I wouldn't have much use for it myself, but I get, you know, particularly families, it's you know, a lot more convenient to sort of have everything personalized to you. I understand that.
Yeah, similar to their music offering, I think they noted in the presentation as well that it'll have the different accounts you can use for each individual, and it'll collect songs and playlists. It'll show you each one depending on which profile you're looking at. I wonder, is there a massive need for account switching on iPads? Do you reckon that many people share iPads so much or have exclusive uses that they wouldn't want the other person really seeing or mind them seeing?
I think they don't share them that much currently because you can't really do it. But, you know, especially in families where you give your kid and they, you know, use their Touch ID or face and it unlocks, you know, just the games and, you know, turns on safe browsing and various other, you know, hides the email so they don't accidentally start emailing your work or messaging your friends or whatever. I can see a use for it, you know, not for me personally, but I definitely think it's long overdue. So this bit I got really excited by when they announced controller support for the Xbox and the PlayStation 4. What do you guys think of this?
Yeah, I did not expect that. I when they said two controllers, I kind of expected the Xbox controller more than PlayStation. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the, even though it's Microsoft, if there's always been a closer link with Xbox or not. I'm not really sure, but I think that definitely got one of the biggest whoops of the evening, and it was definitely a surprise to everyone. I think there was quite a few leaks, obviously, about dark mode and other things, and that certainly sort of took everyone by surprise and was a big sort of big reveal.
Yeah, it's probably the first sort of big surprise that hadn't leaked, I guess, in the presentation. So, you know, warmed the crowd up. So I see this as potentially a longer term play for Apple in the sense of they've got Apple Arcade coming in the fall. One of the downsides of the Apple TV is the controller is pretty cruddy, especially for playing games on. You could buy some of these, you know, Steam controllers or these other third party ones, which unless you're a hardcore gamer, you're not going to buy. But I guess by supporting, you know, an Xbox controller or a PlayStation 4 controller, casual gamers like me, you know, I've got an Xbox, but I don't play it that often. If I had an Apple TV, you know, and I subscribed to Apple Arcade, played on my phone, I could continue when I get home, use a controller. I can see it slowly sort of, you know, treading on the Xbox and the PlayStation's toes, or maybe more the Switch, really, I guess, because it's probably aimed more at a casual gamer. You know, but it's getting into those households where people already have these. I think it's an interesting sort of strategic move, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that, you know, clearly PlayStation and Xbox are happy to, you know, allow the use for these controllers. And I think, personally, it's because they don't feel that there's a threat there. There's new PlayStation and Xbox consoles coming out, maybe this year, definitely by next year. And I think that's going to obviously take gaming to the next level. I think this will be very much something alongside that, a bit like iOS gaming is currently. I think it'll certainly fulfill that sort of casual thing. It could possibly have a big effect on possibly the Wii or
the Switch.
The Switch. Because I think that is a more casual gamer experience. I think something like Mario Kart could probably work on, not that they would ever get Mario Kart particularly, but that type of sort of more casual game would work well with the Apple Arcade.
I think Mario Kart is, or a version of Mario Kart is being released for iOS at some point. I don't think it's necessarily going to be on the TV. I don't think they announced that, but definitely an iOS version of Mario Kart. So I think it could be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, they did, what was it, Mario Run, but it was quite different. Yeah. But it's still...
That was quite different.
Yeah, it was very different. It's still Mario, and it took a lot of people, but I think comparing that side of things to sort of what Xbox and PlayStation are going to be bringing out next year is, I, think they're going to be, they're still going to be maintain that gap, let's say, between those casual gaming and sort of a little more intense.
Yeah, it's a different level of quality, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like, I'm sure this Apple Arcade is going to look great, but the, you know, the big hitters, the, you know, FIFA and Call of Duty and everything else, is still going to, you know, the best experience is still going to be on the new consoles, the high end.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting that they're doing that, and I think, I mean, for me personally, this is one of many in the conference that I noticed that might not work for me. I've got an Xbox One, not an Xbox One S. They mentioned that the controller for the Xbox One S would work with it. I know it is a slightly different controller. I'm worried my controller won't work. And there's quite a few moments which I'll bring up throughout sort of the podcast where I feel like I'm being left behind. But it's the typical thing, but there was just so many this year that, yeah, I'll mention them as they come up.
I feel an interesting point whilst we're on the gaming subject is whilst it won't compete with the Xboxes and PlayStations in terms of their signature games and the more intense games, like you said, FIFA and Call of Duty, there's definitely been a rise in some of the more independent games. You know, talking like Fortnite and PUBG, which also have mobile versions. So I think that's a market that they could probably tap into a bit more with this move.
Yeah, maybe the next, you know, big hit comes from Apple Arcade. You know,
possibly, yeah.
So should we move on and talk about watchOS?
Oh, yes.
So the main theme here was an app store for the Apple Watch and, you know, independent apps. So no longer needing an iPhone to run an app. You can sort of have a completely native app. This, I thought, is really interesting because they've slowly been making the watch more and more independent. And I feel like this is almost the final step. And I can't help but feel that, you know, the reason they are pursuing this is to eventually have a watch that will just work with Android. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think it would be good to have the cross-compatibility and to see how many people would adopt it. I actually probably do prefer the features of the Apple Watch compared to the Samsung S3 watch. I do think the Apple Watch and its features are a lot more smarter, they're a lot more tailored, and they work better in terms of the watch offerings than what Samsung will offer. The native app store would be good. I, looking up in preparation for this, I didn't realise that Google's Wear OS also have their own app store and have had for a while.
Did it? Huh?
Yeah, but apparently it's not so well received at the moment. So it's a wonder why they've had it out for so long and it hasn't really developed much. I think that will probably come more into play when Google release their own Android watch. It's been something on the cards for a while.
I really struggle to see why you would have an app store on a watch unless it is because you can't install the apps any other way. I really don't understand.
Yeah. I also wondered how it would affect performance. Like, if you've got an app store and you've got access to all these apps, plus they've added some extra apps on top, how is it going to affect probably the performance of the older smartwatches? I assume the new one they release would be more better built for this more increased storage and usage.
Yeah, what watch have you got, Frost?
So this is my second gripe, where I feel left behind. I've got the series. I've got the Series 3. They mentioned obviously this is going to support watches from Series 1 to 4. So just the Series 0, the first watch wouldn't be supported. And yeah, obviously, you know, they announced some nice new sort of watch faces. They look incredible. And some new apps, and obviously the App Store. I've got a feeling the Series 3 will get the App Store. It'll get some of the new apps, but watch face-wise, we'll probably be left behind on that front. I know, obviously, the layout for the Series 4 is different, and you know. But I think they'll certainly be focusing on providing the Series 4 with the better watch faces. I think the Series 3 will probably get a couple of new wallpapers, you know, more than anything drastic, sort of layout wise, but there we go. That's always the way.
That didn't even cross my mind that I wouldn't get those lovely, beautiful watch faces, and now I feel a bit upset.
We'll see. There's been a couple since the Series 3 has been out. There's been a few updated, but I think, I don't know. But then they will surprise you. I mean, not to jump ahead too far, but Animoji, is it? That's suddenly, or Memoji. that's now supported by phones that haven't got the true depth camera front facing, and it's just, you know, well, you told us we couldn't have it, and now we can have it. So because again, I'm an iPhone 7 Plus guy, so you know, I haven't got that front facing true depth camera, but now, you know, Memoji's going to work for me. Okay, I'm probably not going to use it, but still, it's, you know, a software development they clearly made to enable that, which is great. I'm not complaining, but, you know, I just wonder whether, you know, they could maybe implement some of these watch faces, but they're going to save it for the Series 4.
Yeah, I think I have to have a look, because I'm guessing a few people have installed the beta version now, and, you know, that information is probably out there, so it'd be really interesting.
Yeah.
So there were a few new apps as well. So there was a calculator, which, you know, considering we had calculator watches decades ago, is nice to finally have.
Casios, yeah.
You know, voice memos, which I am definitely going to use. I think I did install a few third-party ones, but I never bothered using them. But this looks like it's got good integration, so I'll probably have a go at that. A noise app, which I thought was a really clever use of the technology.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. Hearing is really important, and I think a lot of people don't realise how much damage is done. And it's... it's just, yeah, I think a lot of people, it will be no surprise that there's very little noise really, but some people will perhaps realize that there is a lot of noise where they work, or, you know, day to day that they're involved in.
And then, you know, some more health focused features, so a cycles app for women to track their periods. Any thoughts on that?
I imagine it would be quite useful for women. It's not something I've ever looked into that sort of those types of apps before, never had a need to, so it's hard to sort of understand the significance of it. But I from a general point of view, I feel it would have some relevance to them, and they would probably use it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, those apps already exist. I don't know, certainly for iPhone, I don't know if they exist for the watch as well.
Yeah.
But now, you know, Apple are going to have their own one. And it was something I, you know, wanted to raise on the podcast, you know, towards yourself, Dom, about, you know, third parties, you know, having these ideas and these great apps that do certain things, solve certain problems, and then Apple come along, their own solution to that, you know, largely probably, you know, exactly the same solution. How does that affect, like, third-party apps and, you know, yourself being a developer and having your own app? Is there always that fear that Apple are going to come in and steamroller things and destroy you? And
yeah, I think you always have that fear, and, you know, moderation in particular is, you know, a type of app I feel like they could eventually do. I know Samsung have a sort of food tracking app. But in general terms, I feel like it makes the overall apps better. So, you know, this update to reminders looks really good. But, you know, there's always going to be third-party reminder apps and to-do apps, you know, and they're just going to find new features, new niches, you know, more innovative ways of solving the problem. So, you know, the Cycles app, as an example, it looks fairly feature complete, you know, like it gives notifications for your fertility window and stuff, which is pretty neat if you're trying to have a baby. But I'm sure some of the third-party apps, if not already, will do, you know, come the fall, have features which this doesn't have, and we'll hopefully be able to keep supporting those apps as well. I think for moderation in particular, feel like it's almost a too simple implementation for Apple to copy. Feel like they'd want to do a sort of scan and enter in the food and track calories, but then probably realize that it's not a nice, easy way of doing that yet.
Yeah.
Maybe eventually when you get this kind of food scanning cameras working, you know, quite accurately, but I, you know, I feel like they may get laughed off stage if they said, here's our food tracking app, and you say healthy or unhealthy. I think it might get panned, even though I think it's a great idea, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they would actually steal that implementation of it. So I feel like I got a few years yet anyway to try and at least make it fully functional and, you know, gain an audience.
Yeah. And what do we think about the was it the last thing I think on watch was the fitness trends? I just think that looks amazing. I think it's such a great idea.
Yeah, I think that's really good. It's great to get that sort of level of insight. It's not something I've seen across any other third-party apps or anything like that. So it's good that it's been introduced. Hopefully other apps can do the same thing, and it's something I can take advantage of.
Yeah, so this is the area I feel like a lot of apps fall down in is that visualizing and giving insights of into your data. So, you know, part of the reason why I wanted to create moderation was to empower people to actually use that data as opposed to just using it to track and sell ads. So it's really clever. The closest thing I've seen is the Nokia now within sort of smart scales. They have some really good visualizations in there which actually are useful to you.
Right.
So this is one of my most exciting things to look forward to, really, is these activity trends. You know, it's good that every year they keep making activity better with the smart coaching and, you know, the challenges and challenge your friends. It's slow progress, but steady progress. So, you know, I feel like they probably do lead as an overall package in this area. You know, Fitbit probably has better social and sort of leaderboard type stuff, but as an overall package, you know, Apple are probably leading.
Yeah, I thought that thing with the sort of was the last 90 days sort of benchmarked against the last year. And it's, you know, if you're trending down, it, you know, you really notice that. And I think it'll just be a good incentive for people to exercise. I thought that was a really clever idea that I haven't seen before.
I'm definitely going to steal that 90-day year trend as well for moderation.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Okay, so we talk about iOS 13.
Craig.
Uh-huh. Craig.
Air Force One.
Craig to the stage. Yeah.
So, you know, the marquee feature, which had been largely leaked and talked about, was, of course, dark modes. What are your guys' thoughts on this?
For me, it's nothing new. I think, like, we discussed this before. I've had it on my Samsung for a while. I looked at my old Samsung, the S9, which I haven't updated in a long time. It's on there as well, and similar where it flows through all to like the calendar apps and stuff like that. That dark theme sort of applies throughout the system. But it's not been something native to Android up until it's been notified for Android Q. So it's something more that Samsung's done rather than Android.
I feel like this is one of those things where everyone wants it. But then, in reality, I'm not sure how many people will use it. I mean, I definitely will. I tend to use dark mode for any apps that currently support it.
Yeah, I've got it on mine.
But, you know, I don't know. I just get the impression that, you know, my sister, for example, probably isn't going to even know this exists, let alone turn her on. But, you know, they've done it. They've finally done it. They've been sort of talking or rumoured to do it for a long time. So it ticks a box. Guess all the geeks happy.
Do you think they'll, you know, when you're sort of setting up your phone for the first time, it'll say, do you want light or dark mode? You know, it's, I mean, it's hard to know how the maybe less interested user would find this. You know, I remember when on Mac we got the sort of dark modes and I was straight on there, you know, investigating that and putting that on. But yeah, it's interesting that if someone not particularly interested in their phone would find that. Possibly if they saw their friends or someone else,
they'd
be like, well, that looks different to mine. Maybe, you know, how do you do that?
Yeah, I think they're adding a toggle in Control Center, which, you know, people might accidentally discover by, well, what's this?
Right.
And then click it and then notice the screen goes black.
Yeah. I did find it odd they sort of focused on the home screen with the wallpaper, and it seems to some of the wallpapers you get, you know, the Apple wallpapers, it'll turn those from, you know, any white on there will be black. But apart from that, nothing else changes on the home screen. I've seen these screenshots of it, and I mean, I use a sort of a wallpaper that isn't an Apple wallpaper, so it wouldn't make any difference to the home screen then whatsoever. I just find it weird. They focused on the wallpaper a fair bit, and
yeah,
it's not. It's just
it looks exactly the same, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just a different wallpaper. Yeah. But sure, yeah, in messages, calendar, things like that, it's a big change. But nothing, like Kish said, it's nothing groundbreaking. Yeah. It's just, it's just, oh, here we go. 10 years after everyone else or whatever it was, you know, here's the dark mode.
It does look good, though.
I feel like whilst you're making that point, like it is nothing new. With my proud Android hat on, I'm going to drop another one that they've released, is the swipe typing. Again, nothing new, but stuff I've had for, I can't remember how many years now on Android, as a standard, not a third-party app version. regardless of which skinned version of Android is using, it tends to be built in.
Yeah, so I've got mixed feelings about this because, you know, if you know, it's easy to say, oh, they finally got it, but they've had third-party keyboards, you know, I think since iOS 7 or 8.
Yep.
And yep. I've installed a couple, like Gboard is one, and purely just to use the swiping keyboard because I think it is actually really, really useful and much faster once you get used to it. But I could never keep using them because I didn't like the actual keyboard layout. So none of them like replicated the Apple one, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I was used to it. I don't think there was any other reason other than the fact I've had years of like training myself to use the Apple layout. So I'm actually really grateful that they've released this so I can use the Apple keyboard and swipe without having to compromise between one or the other. So you know, I'm quite excited for this.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I, as you mentioned in your introduction or in the for the website introduction, that I'm a secret iPad user. So I have some experience of the iPad keyboard, which I imagine is quite similar to the iOS version.
It's a little bit bigger.
Other than that. but it's one of those things where I've used a few different keyboards. I've used the Gboard, Samsung's own version, Swipe. They had their own version when they first released the Swipe keyboard. HTC I've used before when I've had their devices. And the iPad one, the iOS version. I don't necessarily feel that there's that many differences in them. I feel like the keyboard's just a keyboard. They're all sized pretty similarly. The keys are all pretty much laid in the same places. You can have a little bit of customization as to, you know, if you want numbers shown at the top or on a different menu or whatever. But other than that, I don't know. I don't feel there's that much difference between various keyboards.
The iPad one, I'd agree, but I haven't really tried any other ones but for the iPad. But for the iPhone, whenever I've switched, my sort of typing accuracy just decreases massively. I'm not sure if it's the autocorrect or the touch targets or what's going on, but or the size of the keys. I don't know if they're playing around with that, but for whatever reason, it just doesn't. I can never sort of settle into a new keyboard. So it's fine when I'm swiping on these third parties, and then as soon as I need to type, normally I'll just get frustrated and then I'll uninstall it. So I quite like that they again this year focused on performance improvements. I was a little bit worried. I think most people were that they had a one-off and sort of cleaned house and then they were going to forget about it for another sort of 12 years, but they've continued to improve speed. Sort of a couple of things that sort of stood out for me was Face ID 30% faster. So I know neither of you have Face ID. It's amazing but it is a slight, and I'm talking like a half a second or a second sort of slight lag where it's scanning your face, which is fine. But, 30% off that is going to feel ridiculously fast. It's going to feel like a brand new phone. So I'm quite excited by that. And then apps launching 2 times faster as well. That's incredible considering they made quite big leaps towards faster launching last year as well.
Yeah, I think with, Huawei and OnePlus and all these sort of phones, incredibly fast Face ID unlocks and really fast displays as well. Apple had to sort of give an update on that front, I think, this year.
I think it's really good for, you said you got an iPhone 7, you're going to install that and it's going to feel faster. It's going to feel like you got a new phone again. I'm not sure how much of an improvement you felt when you installed iOS 12. Did you notice speed?
No, I didn't notice any difference. But there we go, if there is an improvement, I'll be grateful it's there, even if I can't notice it,
So there was a new Reminders app, which I think you were quite excited by, Frost.
Yeah, it's probably the app I use most, aside from sort of messages and maybe Twitter. So, any sort of improvements to that is going to be good. And I haven't actually seen much about it. They skimmed over it quite quickly in the conference. There seemed to be some, you could sort of add some media to it, you could add photos, is that correct? Or
I'm not sure, I can't remember that bit. I remember there was like lists within lists, which I thought was quite interesting, so basically subtasks.
Yeah, perfect. And all about that.
And there was a really clever feature where if you said, remind me to call Dom, when you're like messaging me, it'll pop up a little reminder. So it's kind of context aware of when you're speaking to someone to know if you mentioned them in your reminder to kind of remind you.
Right, yeah,
yeah. That's quite cool.
Yeah, I think they mentioned, yeah, we've got even better at like sort of predicting what you're going to want to be reminded about or something like that. And it was like, okay, we'll see how well that works. But it probably will work fine, you know. Every Monday, it's going to remind me to go and buy stir fry ingredients, so it's gonna notice that trend, I think.
In terms of this, like picking up these sorts of details from messages and emails and stuff like that, is this not something that was done before? Maybe not so much messages, but from emails. If you got like flight confirmations come through, would it not check reminders into your calendar?
Yeah, so it would scan your email and put stuff in your calendar. I think the particular example they showed, you know, reminding about a person, it would, so if I said, oh, remind me to call Kishan tomorrow, it would pop up a reminder tomorrow and then I can touch it and it would call. But I think this is more like, remind me to call Kishan, and then when I speak to you, he'll say, oh, you need to call him. Although that's a really bad example because I'm speaking to you, but so I don't know, it's only the one example they showed, so I'm not sure if they've done other clever stuff really. Yeah. But
I might have got the wrong end of the stick with part of it, but is there some sort of, it's almost sharing the reminders or sharing the tasks? So I've used an app in the past, I didn't use it for very long, where I could, me and my girlfriend could have the same sort of to-dos on a list, and then as one picks up one, you know, it's updated on the other's sort of list, so that you're not maybe both buying the same things from the shop, or you're not both, I don't know, doing any sort of reminded task that one of the two of you needs to do.
I don't know. I feel like it would do that. I hope it does. That'd be great.
That does sound good.
I guess we have to wait and see. So there was one of like my most exciting sort of bits, and my where I got quite excited was the Apple sign-in, which is, you know, sort of like signing with Facebook, signing with Google type system, where you haven't got to type in your name, address, you know, email, all the information. So it's a quick way of signing up for services or apps. But you know, the real sort of key feature here from Apple's point of view is a really big focus on privacy. So you can control what information you send to that third party, and you can even mask your email address with a random sort of email address, I guess, you know, auto forwards any emails from that app or a website to that email address, and you can disable that at a later date. So this I thought was really cool. You know, I unfortunately have used signing with Facebook and Google previously in the old days. So companies out there have linked me and probably built up all sorts of information and tracking on me. I don't do it anymore for this very reason. I just hate it. Hate the idea of it. So this I'm going to 100% use as soon as it's available. You know, I'm a big fan of this feature.
I think it looks amazing.
Yeah, it's a really good feature. Privacy is definitely a bigger thing these days than it has been in the past. And the ability to have a masked email address and have minimal data sent and be more in control of what's being shared is definitely a massive plus point, something I'm a bit jealous of, I'll admit.
Apparently, they're going to force any app that uses third-party logins. So if your app currently says login with Facebook, they're going to force you, as soon as you update your app next time, they'll reject it unless you add an option for Apple sign-in. So is this Apple abusing power? But you know, in the end of the day, it benefits users. I'd be curious to get your guys' thoughts on that.
So it's forcing the app creators to use Apple sign-in.
Support this, yeah. as an option, not the only option, but if they are including the sign-in with Facebook, they have to include sign-in with Apple.
I wouldn't necessarily call it an abuse of power. I feel it's something the user's definitely going to want. And the fact of that message coming from Apple will probably prompt a more swift response from the developers of those apps rather than if users just started asking for it. So I think that's quite a good thing, personally. It's not that they're saying you have to use Apple alone. They're just saying add it as an option. I think it's reasonable.
I think the best feature of this is the whole hiding your email thing. That is part of this, isn't it? Where if you don't want that company to see your email, yeah, I think that's just such a big deal. I use Facebook to sign into stuff still. It's probably one of the only reason I've still got a Facebook account is that I can use that just to quickly, easily sort of sign into something and have an account there. It's just so much easier, and I haven't got to the point where you have, Tom, where I've given up on it or I don't like it. You know, I don't like it, but I just find the ease of it too good to deny. So I think with Apple doing it, I will be all over that, and I'll be hiding my email address to everyone. And it's just such a great idea. I just think... when you say with an app you've got, when we get iOS 13... is it going to prompt then, like, to almost like re-sign in, or are we going to have to sign out of an app for then it to prompt you to sort of go?
I think you'd probably have to sign out and create a new account. So it's not as if everyone's going to switch to this overnight. It'll be whenever you install a new app that you've never used, or if you're using an app where you don't mind,
right? Okay.
Sort of creating an account. That's what I'm guessing anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, so many times I download an app and the first thing I see is signing with Facebook or Google, and I'm like, okay, uninstall, I can't be bothered with that. So I can't be bothered to type my email and create a password and all that. So, you know, it's quite a big barrier. So I think it'll actually improve, you know, apps.
Sign up.
Like, you know, one of the reasons moderation doesn't have an account is A, I don't want anyone's information, and B, it's just a massive hindrance to that onboarding experience. Even when you have signing with Facebook. But, you know, maybe signing with Apple could be a future feature for moderation if you want to maybe sync your data in the cloud, which you kind of need an account for. Who knows? But, you know, it's definitely closer to my values than signing with Facebook, which I hate.
Yeah, another one of the security developments they released was the location sharing. You can have it only do it the first time and ask for it again rather than constantly having to share it.
Yeah,
being tied into that. When I was looking around on Android earlier, this is also something coming in the new Android Q. So the exact same thing where it'll allow you to just say, do it this time, ask me again if you need it in the future. But I think the problem Android will have is getting that out to users. So something Apple touched on in the conference was that iOS 12 had like an 85% adoption compared to the latest version of Android being 10%. The big problem with that is that there's so many Android phones out of various ages and different companies, different skinned versions, so that Google will release the update, so all the Google devices running stock Android will get it pretty much straight away. But anybody using like a Samsung, HTC, Sony will have to wait for the manufacturers to skin a version over the top and then release it, and then it just, that is a really bad sort of way of having to get these new updates. It just adds massive delay.
I think, again, it's another feature which, you know, I'm already going down this path of being very aware of my location sharing. And, you know, the other day, funnily enough, I was going through the entire list of my apps because Apple are pretty good currently. And, you know, you can see every single app that has permission. And currently you can say when using or always on. So the always on being, they can keep tracking you in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how or when I accepted some of these, but like I'm making this up, so it's an example. So, but you know, something like Argos was like always on. It's like, well, why the hell does that need to be always on? and in reality, it doesn't even need to know my location. I can type in my postcode if I really want to find it. I don't need it, you know, using sort of the actual GPS. I'd rather it not be that precise, maybe. And, you know, just type in Cardiff. I want to see the Argos in Cardiff. So I think the, you know, use once approach is really clever. And it sounded really interesting. It didn't really share details, but the way they described it was, I think they used the word reports on their usage. So maybe you'll be able to see, you know, again, picking on Argos, they may not even track this, but as an example, if they are checking your location every hour, you know, maybe you get like a notification from Apple that says, oh, you know, here's Argos's location usage every hour. It looks suspicious, maybe. You know, do you expect the app to be using your location this often? So hopefully this is more to it than just what we saw, and you get some clever sort of reports about this background usage, which will shame hopefully some developers into using, you know, who are using some of these ad tracking sort of companies and whatever else they're doing, shame them into, you know, being a bit more honest, hopefully.
Yeah.
So I really liked the new Photos app. It was, you know, they've regrouped it again. So they had, like, I think they call them, I'm not even sure what they call them, but like a year kind of view on the current iPhone.
Yeah, days,
iPhone.
Months and years.
Yeah. So this new one, you know, it's the same sort of stuff, but it's just done in a much better way. And it sort of creates your gallery view, I guess, picking the good photos. So, you know, I've got about 20 pictures of kebabs in my Photos app, which I don't really need to see. So hopefully it gets rid of those and shows like the meaningful moments. The problem with some of these features is obviously when they demo it on stage, it looks amazing. Like, wow, look at all those photos of that birthday. And then in reality, on your phone, you've got one dingy sort of hard to see picture of someone blowing out a candle. So maybe it won't be quite as good. But I am quite optimistic and quite excited to see what it does with my library. So I've got photos, I think, from 2007 on my phone. So from when I had my Nokia N97, I think it was.
That's going
so
back.
I've built a really big photo library. And occasionally I'll kind of browse through it. And it's not great to find those really good memories unless you've sort of either grouped them or flagged them as favourites. So I'm going to be really, really curious to try this on my phone and see what it does.
Yeah, it does look good. I think I thought exactly the same thing when they show it on stage. It looks fantastic with the sort of the family in the field and having a great time. It's like that, you know, it's not going to be the same for majority of users. It's not going to look as fantastic. But I think the idea of hiding screenshots, things like that from, you know, when you're browsing through your photos, it's going to make things a lot cleaner, a little more sort of, just displayed a lot better. And you know, when you're sort of sharing your sort of holiday photos, it'll be a lot easier to sort of show that basically to friends or family or whatever.
Yeah, it brings a lot of similarities to Google Photos. So they will display things at day level, and you can zoom out and it'll condense to month and year, and it'll group photos by days and occasions. If like when I climbed Penavan, it grouped like a load of photos from that in one album, and did like you had in the conference preview, like a string of photos, like a live photo or a couple of photos stitched together to make a little video. The sort of Google Photos already does that, so it is quite similar to something that's already out there.
Yeah, I think Google Photos has always really been ahead, and that's, you know, they get to utilize the cloud and do some really clever machine learning stuff. But I've been impressed by how much Apple are able to do just on device. You know, because some of this stuff, you think, how the hell are they doing this? And they're not even, you know, sending all your photos and doing it all in the cloud. They're just doing it on your device. So I'm happy they keep making it better. I think, you know, they're still behind Google really, because Google keep making theirs better. Photos is a massive sort of use of phones nowadays.
Yeah,
cameras and photos. So there's probably a lot more to come. But we'll see. We'll see if it's as good as it looks, and it's definitely going to be better than what it was. So I'm quite thankful for it. So, Apple invented Street View by the looks of it.
Reinvented.
So, Kish, what are your thoughts on this as a you know, sort of Android user?
Funny enough, as I saw it on the screen, I immediately opened up Google Maps and went into Street View. I have a bit of a comparison. I don't really. One of their big selling points was the smooth transitions as you're traveling down the street. It doesn't really make much of a difference to me. I feel that's more of a gimmicky thing. But what I really did like is that with Apple's version is the overlay of like the shop icons and stuff. You can click on it and you can get more information instantly without having to leave Street View, which is something that wasn't happening on Google Maps.
Yeah, the overlays looked really precise as well. Yeah. Like they were like pinned onto to the signs, you know, effectively. And I really liked this move. You know, I was like, oh, it's just Street View, wow, you know, so what. And as soon as they clicked on a street and it kind of moved without any of that pixelation or that kind of checkerboarding loading type stuff, I was like, wow. So I quite like that. And also it seemed easier to navigate. I don't, you know, until you can play with it, I'm not so sure. But
yeah,
so many times on Street View, on Google Street View, where you're trying to like go to a certain point on the street and then you go too far, you go backwards, can't quite look that way because it didn't take a picture, and it's just a bit fiddly to really explore. Obviously, they were demoing a street that they probably took a billion photos of. So again, yeah, you know, your mileage may vary, but you know, as a tech demo, for a feature, I thought is just catch up. Actually, they did add some new stuff I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest struggles they'll have is the adoption of it. Because by the time they get, they haven't got the whole of the US covered yet, but they said they will pretty much by release, and other select European cities. If you fall outside of that radius or whatever, then you're not going to go to it. You're going to go to the big player, which is Google Maps. I think loads of people already used Google Maps. I think it'll be hard for them to get the buy-in.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had that thought when I was watching the presentation. I thought, it's going to take ages. And then I had a sort of realization that Google's data is aging now. I mean, I'm pretty sure the Street View around Wales, at least, is the same one that when they first did it, which must be nearing a decade, surely.
No, it's not. No.
Have they updated it?
Yeah.
Oh.
I still see the vans out every now and again, the Google cars.
I stand corrected then. So I thought maybe Apple would have a bit of a benefit in a year or two when they finally get up to speed of just that recency of data. But obviously, Google have been keeping on top of it. I have to have a look at my old house to see. Because that one I remember looking, I was like, I had the wrong car. I was like, and I always look at it, so I'll check.
Yeah, I think they're just catching up really with Google. Like you said, they're adding a couple of new things, but Google surely will be before the year is out as well. I'm a Google Maps user, also a Spotify user. I'm sounding really anti-Apple today. I was brought on as the Apple side of things, but I think I'll certainly be trying the new Apple Maps when it's available, because I want to use that, but Google is just better, as is Spotify. But there we go.
So, AR kit or augmented reality kit, they've got a new version of this. They've been making improvements year on year. It seems, my speculation, inevitable that they are working on some sort of glasses, and this is all just the groundwork for that.
So hey, Google Glass.
Yeah, Google Glass, but yeah, maybe with loads of holes in it, like the Mac Pro, who knows. But, I still don't get it. I and maybe it'll click once they release new hardware, but in terms of the phone and iPad, yes, there's interest in tech demos, but, do you guys have any augmented reality apps on your phones or on your tablets?
No. Like, it was something that was... when I got the iPad, it was something that was hailed as one of the unique features. And I've always thought, it'd be good to give her a go, see what it's like, but I've never really bothered.
Yeah, I tried Pokemon Go for 2 days. I suppose that uses it. And probably Translate, sort of holding your phone up to something to translate it. That's another example, but day-to-day, no use for AR whatsoever.
Okay, I think there's one more thing on our list here for iOS 13, which I thought this was really cool until I realised it was AirPods only, which was sharing audio over Bluetooth, so being able to, have an audio jack splitter, but virtually for Bluetooth.
Great idea. But like you said, if it's not going to work with my nice new Sonys, it's a bit of a shame. It's a good idea. It's a really good idea. I think everyone was hoping that would work with when they announced the AirPods 2. Obviously, it's taken a little bit longer than that to bring that out. And also with, I guess it was in the Siri section, they were saying about the AirPods being able to automatically read text messages you receive. Presumably that is AirPods only as well.
Yeah, I think AirPods and, the Power Beats or the other sort of headphones use the same chipset. I feel like that might be AirPods 2 only as well, the Hey Siri one.
Yeah.
I hope not, but it probably is, yeah. Kish, does Android do any sort of audio sharing over Bluetooth, do you know?
Not that I'm familiar with. It's not something, I've not really used much Android audio devices. Like Frosty, I use the Sony headphones, so it's just a standard Bluetooth connection there. Yeah, so I'm not sure.
it feels like the kind of feature that should be, just everyone should have this. Just
it doesn't seem complicated, doesn't seem like a big ask.
No, even if they put two Bluetooth chips in it so you can just connect, like actually connect two different headphones but stream the same audio. I mean, I don't get why people aren't doing that.
Yeah.
They've got like five cameras, just put two Bluetooth chips in it.
Yeah. How many is the new iPhone going to have? Like five? Yeah, it's going to have five, isn't it? Three on the back, two on the front?
Probably, yeah. Okay, so
in September to find out.
Yeah. So, should we talk about iPadOS? So, it's got a new name. So, it's no longer iOS, it's iPadOS.
Craig again.
Any thoughts on this?
I think it's always needed it. I think people always were crying out for more of essentially a Mac, touchscreen Mac in their hands. I think what they've done here is probably the best idea. It's never going to work having full sort of Mac software running on your tablet, but this looks great. I think the home screen looks really good with the sort of widgets on the side. I think I've forgotten what the feature is called now.
The slide over, is it?
Slide over, yeah. That looks amazing, having split screen of the same apps. The example with Mail, really good. I think Mail, particularly on iPhone, could still do with a big overhaul. Not sure how much there will be in iOS 13, but getting from message to message back and forth, you know, wanting to say reply to something, but then get an attachment from a separate email to put into that email, is, you know, you just want to get on a Mac or on a PC and do it there. But I think Apple are doing the right thing by giving the iPad its own OS basically, and it's going to improve the usability of the iPad indefinitely.
Yeah, I'm not as sold on the new home screen. I think I was hoping for, you know, a fairly big sort of redesign, and you know, all they've done is put the one screen, squeeze it in on the left, which seems like a, you know, 5 minute afterthought. I was hoping that you could have more interactive sort of icons. Maybe you could have like real time icons, so similar to how the calendar icon shows, you know, the actual date.
Yeah.
Allowing third party developers to control the icon in a semi sort of real time basis, or different size icons. So I don't know, I was a little bit disappointed with the home screen, but it's definitely better than what it was, so you know, it's an improvement. The new multitasking, splitting apps, is really interesting. I'm not sure if people will have to update the apps to support that. I'm guessing so. It seems like it may break otherwise, because they expect to be running in one, you know, one version of themselves. So that would be interesting. Hopefully people support that.
Yeah.
And I guess the other thing was they finally allowed you to plug in a USB sort of thumb drive, which...
Yeah. You know, and a camera.
Finally.
Yeah.
And a camera, yeah.
I was just thinking about this. This isn't them getting rid of the Lightning port, is it?
Well, on the new iPads, the new iPad Pros at least, there's USB-C, so...
Oh, nice.
So when they released that, everyone assumed, oh, great, we can plug in a USB-C thumb drive.
Yeah. But there was none of that, was there? There was no announcement of actual usage of it. It was just, yeah. But now it's here.
It's a sort of feature that people are going to use very, very rarely. But I think I had an occasion, I think when I was, you know, in America with work, where I had something on a USB, like a PowerPoint, and had my iPad with me. And I was like, oh, I can't actually get it off you and email to someone. I need to find an actual physical computer, which seems ridiculous. So, you know, it's rare, but it's silly in this day and age. It's taken this long, but a welcome addition. I think the other feature with iPad, but it's also a sort of Mac OS feature, is Sidecar, which allows you to sort of use your iPad as an additional display. So what do you guys think of this?
Big fan of this. Really big fan of this.
Yeah, I would use it if I had an iPad that wasn't a second generation, but there we go. I'm not expecting them to keep the updates for my 10-year-old iPad, but yeah.
So what iPad have you got?
I think it's the second one.
Just iPad 2?
Yeah, yeah.
iPad A?
I'm not in any way saying that should still be supported. I'm just, yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I had one of the new iPads. They look absolutely amazing, but and I would use this feature if I had one, hands down.
Does that mean you're going to buy one?
This is funny. I was thinking about what the sort of impact of WWDC is on just on the sales of their existing products, because it, I haven't been as sort of this year, I suppose I haven't been overly inclined to look at any of these new products. And then I watched the keynote and I'm just like, oh, I could get an iPad. And I just wonder if they see an uptake in sales just from, I mean, every website, you know, BBC, Sky, and then every sort of news provider, and obviously all the tech sort of blogs and everything, as soon as WWDC happens, they're all over it. And I just wonder, it's obviously something for them to announce all their new software. A lot of it's quite nerdy, but, you know, it just gets everyone sort of, I guess, talking about them again, even though a lot of these features, and there was no real achievable new products to go and buy. You know, the Mac Pro is not something the public are going to go and buy tomorrow or whenever. But it just gets people talking about Apple again. And I wonder whether it's something they need in this sort of halfway through the iPhone cycle, I suppose, whether it's sort of, they see this bump in sales again just to get them over through to October.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I've got the iPad Pro 10.5 inch, and my plan is to wait until the next version of the iPad Pro to upgrade. And I'll probably go for, because it's going to be, it's 11 inches, or maybe even the bigger one, 12.9, I haven't decided. But, you know, as you say, that sidecar feature just edges me a bit closer to, well, I'll just get this version, get the 12.9, it can act as a second display, almost helps me justify upgrading. So I think it does probably have an impact on sales. I mean, I'm probably not going to actually do that, but, you know, the thought did cross my mind when you see the you know, the flashy slides in the keynote. You start thinking, oh, you know, this is going to make my life much better if I buy this new iPad. But, yeah. Even the watch stuff, which, you know, I really like the new watch, but I'm holding out till the next one. I've waited this long, I can wait a bit longer. But
it's not going to be long, is it? Well, end of the year again? Because every September, well, the last two Septembers, we've had a new watch, so it's going to be another one in 4 or 5 months.
So, in terms of macOS, they're also getting rid of iTunes, which is, you know, sad, but also a happy time. Splitting into podcast app, audiobooks, music. I believe, music. And Apple video. TV as well. Is this the right thing to do?
I think so. I think it was a lot to house all in one location. I think having dedicated apps probably makes it easier, makes it a cleaner user interface. People know exactly where to go for what they want.
So you use Spotify, Frosty, but I can tell you, Apple Music on iTunes on a Mac currently is awful. It's basically like a web page, and so you click stuff, it takes a second or two to load, and the search is very confusing, so I personally can't wait. I'm hoping it's A, faster, and B, just quicker and simpler to use.
Yeah, I just loaded up iTunes now. I haven't been on there for a while. Feels like it hasn't been updated since. I mean, it's sort of like a bit of a nostalgia trip back to sort of 12 years ago. I had a MacBook Pro, one of the silver ones, it feels like I'm back on that again. Just the sort of the selector in the top left, the sort of, you got music, films, podcasts. It's really horrible to use. And then just the list sort of side of it with the songs, it just looks really dated. I think whatever this new Apple Music app is going to look like is a welcome update.
I think a dedicated podcast app is probably good as well for, you know, the podcast industry. It's obviously grown a lot over the last few years. It seems like everyone listens to podcasts now, so that's a welcome addition, I think, for me at least.
Oh, totally. I probably listen to more podcasts than music, so I think, yeah, the fact that they've now got the Watch app, you know, they're going to have a standalone Mac app, it's totally needed. Like you say, the industry itself is just, in the last 18 months to 2 years, has just exploded. So
it's interesting you say that. As I'm fairly new to podcasts, I only listen to one or two, and even then it's sporadic rather than dedicated listening. But I'll probably use Spotify as my podcast app because it's got it built into there as well. What do you use Apple Podcasts currently? Do you? Why wouldn't you sort of just use Spotify, I suppose, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I know that it's in there. I just don't use it. And even though Spotify has got the sort of the AirPlay 2, you know, the what I forgot what the name of the feature is now. Basically, I've got Sonos at Home.
Okay.
The podcast app for Apple can't, you can't sort of hand that off to your Sonos. You have to go into the Sonos app and find the podcast there and you know, scroll to the right time and sort of resume your playback on your Sonos if you were, you know, just coming in from your day in work or whatever and you want to listen to your podcast.
You need to buy a home pod.
Oh, man, when I saw the handoff feature, I was like, take my money now. That just looks, I think that out of the whole night, that was the one feature I was just like, oh, they've done it. That's amazing.
I use an app called Overcast, so I don't use the built-in Apple app. And there's one big reason why I use this app, which is a feature called Smart Speed. So what it does is any sort of silences in between talking, it sort of speeds up on the fly. So I'm going to have a look actually at my app now. See, it'll tell me how much time I've saved because of this.
Should be useful for this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Smart Speed has saved you an extra 56 hours beyond speed adjustments alone.
Yeah, does it 56 adverts?
Hours. No, but also what you can do is you can specify like a plus or minus, and I've set it as 45 seconds, which most adverts I've noticed are like 90 seconds, so I just tap that twice, and then I've sort of skipped the adverts. Yeah. And you can link that skipping to, you know, your headphones, or it works in my car as well, so if I press next track in the car twice, it'll skip the adverts.
Have you got CarPlay?
Yeah, I got CarPlay, yeah.
I don't know anyone that's got that, so now I do.
It's awesome, actually, CarPlay. And yeah, so this podcast app works with CarPlay as well. So I just plug in to my car, get to work, put my headphones in, my AirPods, it'll start playing. You know, get home, the HomePod will start playing. You know, I'm living the dream. But I would highly recommend Overcast. If you listen to a lot of podcasts, just for the saving the time. It's actually, you know, a much better interface as well. And it's got dark mode.
Well, I'm more than happy with the podcast app, the Apple one. I love it. I think it's great, but I'm more than happy to try this one as well.
You can import your podcast as well. So I think you might have to go to iTunes on your Mac and like export, and then you can import that file, and then it'll just have all of your episodes and all of our stuff.
Fair.
The next feature that they mentioned for macOS, I sort of raised an eyebrow when they said it, which was voice control. And I thought, you know, computers have had voice control for ages, you know, what's all this about? But then I had a really sort of moving video, which I thought was just, you know, absolutely amazing, which sort of highlighted this feature and how important and useful it could be to certain people. So what did you guys make of this?
Yeah, it's definitely going to bring functionality and capabilities to people who have certain disabilities and are able to use the computer like the rest of us. I'm sure there's third-party apps and stuff that would have handled this before, so I'm not sure how it compares to that. It's not something I've previously been made aware of, but I don't think it's necessarily meeting a need that's not been met otherwise. But it's good that they've built it in, so it will act in a specific way, work well with the rest of Apple's ecosystem and its functions. So yeah, I think it's a really good thing to do.
I think what surprised me was, you know, in a world where I feel like it's always the rush for the next big feature, you know, oh, we've got to do dark mode, we've got to, you know, do all this other stuff, that, you know, I'm not sure how much money there is in it to actually do these accessibility features, but I think it highlights Apple's sort of values and beliefs that, you know, it's important that everyone can use this technology. So it took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting it, and I just thought it was really awesome and a bit uplifting. I thought this is really, really cool.
I suppose if I was going to play devil's advocate here, could it be something that they are almost just exploiting in the market, knowing that nobody else, direct manufacturer wise, is sort of advertising these features? There's something they've built in that they want to let the world know about and sort of just tempt more people in into the ecosystem?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I guess it benefits the customer, benefits Apple, everyone's a winner. Don't know why, I was just really, really taken aback. Probably just played on my heartstrings a bit, the sort of video. I just think it's really cool. I'm never going to use it. I'll probably never see anyone ever use it. But I just thought, you know, fair play for a keynote that had so much detail. And I think there's loads of stuff they didn't even mention in the keynote, which is slowly coming out now in the news, you know, other features. You know, to give 5 minutes or however long, a couple of minutes to this, I thought was just really cool. So there was one feature which I can't remember what section it was actually sort of announced in. It might have been the Mac section, which is Find My... So rather than Find My iPhone, they've sort of combined Find My Friends and Find My Phone, Mac, Watch, all into one big app. But the bit that really sort of impressed me and got me a bit excited was the technology they're using to do this. So even if your phone is sort of turned off or your Mac is sort of, you know, closed and not connected to Wi-Fi network, I guess, it can still tell you its location. And it's doing this by using other iOS devices that are close in Bluetooth range as a relay. Yeah. So, you know, if you drop your, or you know, lose your bag in an airport, all the people walking around will act as a relay to, you know, send sort of location information about that device back to the internet, but, you know, all encrypted, all anonymous. So it's not, you know, James Frost's laptop, it's, you know, XYZ's random Apple device is here.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool, a really clever use of like the number of devices that they have, in, you know, out in the wild. Also doing it in a way that's hopefully not going to be, you know, hacked or sort of used in any bad ways. So I just thought that was a really cool use of technology, which I don't think anyone's done before. So, you know, fair play.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's definitely not something I've heard of. But yeah, it's impressive.
So this brings us on to the Mac Pro.
Cheese grater.
Yeah, or as I've heard it called on another podcast I was listening to earlier, the mega grater, because mega there was there was a previous cheese grater Mac Pro, so now this is the mega grater. They also said this is designed more for soft cheese because of the big holes, which I found quite funny. So, you know, obviously we're all going to go out and buy one of these, but before we do... Like, you know, what are people's thoughts on this? As, I guess, regular consumers, you know, maybe not fully understanding everything they're talking about. But, you know, what are your takeaways from this?
It comes across as an impressive machine. It's definitely targeted sort of more at your movie industries, the music industry, stuff like that. Your heavy, heavy users. So I don't really know the market that well. I know they mentioned... competitor monitors and the prices of that, which is insanely ridiculous. But it's an impressive machine with a lot of power. And I think it as much as it looks like a cheese grater, it doesn't look terrible. I think it'll be interesting to see how people use it and what they create from the back of it with all the multitasking and sort of things they could do with, like, creating the 1,000-piece orchestra, whatever they did at the time, and it was so simple and it was so easy to do. I feel like it will be used to create some pretty impressive things for the average Joe.
Are we going to get a new version of the podcast theme tune, Frost? You know, on one of these?
Yeah. Well, you know, going back 15 years, probably, I started going to studios and recording, and Mac Pros were the standard. They were everywhere. The original cheese grater was everywhere. Since, well, I heard it referred to as Darth Vader's toilet, has been out. the black cylinder. You know, I haven't been involved in music since that's been out, but I imagine those are filling up the studios and sort of animation design studios around the world. But I've also heard then that the drawback to that, I think, like you mentioned a few weeks ago, Dom, was the restrictions on how much you can sort of add to it RAM-wise and capacity-wise and lots of other ways, graphics, and also other features as well not being quite there. and also maybe the cooling being an issue. So this just looks like they've just thought, we need to go back to where we were. The amount of ports they got open on the back, you know, it can scale up to, was it 1.5 terabytes of RAM?
Yeah.
I think there'll be quite a few professionals licking their lips at that. The cost is just insane. It feels like that has gone up by more. I know, you know, iPad cost and everything has really skyrocketed as well, but this seems crazy talk. But, you know, if you're Pixar or Rick Rubin, I think it's, you know, it's a drop in the ocean, isn't it?
Did you say Rick Rubin? Who's Rick Rubin?
Oh, sorry, he's like a record producer.
So I think this is one of the rare sort of examples where Apple have let a bit of the design go in favor of functionality. You know, usually you get like an iPhone that's a little bit thinner when people want more battery life, or, you know, the ever-increasing sort of thinness of laptops, which, you know, isn't necessarily great. And there's compromises there, but generally they get it right, you know, and the design is really good. You know, it looks okay. It doesn't look amazing. It looks weird, if anything. It's probably very well made. But they've definitely sacrificed, you know, a very cool looking, like, you know, there was like rumors of a cube or like, you know, yeah, a ball and all this crazy stuff, which, you know, would make it more difficult. It'd look cool, but it'd make it more difficult to actually get good airflow and, you know, put all of this power in there.
Yeah, completely. It doesn't matter. It just does not matter. It, like, it's a different audience to the, you know, the rest of the products, basically. It is for professionals. All they care about is performance, and it does the job, and it's going to be more functional, and it's going to solve a lot of problems, I think, for a lot of people.
But they have added wheels.
Yeah, that I laughed out loud. It almost seemed like a bit of a joke. I thought, like, why the hell does this thing need wheels? I mean, where are you wheeling this to?
One end of the studio to the other, you know. The monitor, I mean, talking about price, I can't. Yeah. I mean, it's almost the same price as the unit. What the hell's going on there?
And it doesn't come with a stand.
And the stand's, what, £500?
Buy a stand. £200 for the stand, £100 for the mount.
No, okay. It's $1,000 for the stand.
Is it?
Yeah. What? So it's $5,000 for the screen, $1,000 for the stand, or $200 for like the mount if you didn't want a stand. Which means you can buy just the screen, I don't know, like lean it against the wall or something.
Oh my days, I can't believe I misunderstood that.
Yeah, I've only got 11 grand.
Bad enough for £200.
Yeah, they went past it pretty quick. They're like, and the monitor is 5,000 and 1,000 for a stand. They kind of like skipped past it so quick, it was insane. I don't understand how it costs $1,000. For a stand, I don't get it. But people are going to buy it. It's not for us, you know.
Yeah.
The screen on the iMac I've got is brilliant and good enough for me. So, good luck to whoever's buying that.
I think the feature they mentioned was it sort of takes all the weight out of the screen, so you can, it feels weightless as you're adjusting the angle and moving it.
Yeah,
It's probably the best hinge ever created, but still shouldn't cost $1,000.
It's insane, isn't it?
Is there anything else you want to talk about, guys?
So when I was looking at rumours in advance of the announcement, a lot of people were talking about having a system where sort of the apps play well across devices, so going from your phone to your iPad to your Mac, and having apps that will just sort of work that much better together across devices. Did any other people sort of see those rumours, and were they expecting that? How did they feel about the sort of lack of news on that?
So I think they didn't really talk about it that much, but it was there. So it was the Project Catalyst, which they mentioned. And so like the new music app, the new podcast app, and the Apple TV app, they're all written using this new technology. So effectively, it's the same code that's running on the iPad version of the app and the iPhone and the Apple TV. It's all one code base, one team effectively creating that. So they've sort of, they didn't really call it out. I guess maybe in the sessions they do later in the week where it's more developer focused, they'll, you know, explain exactly how they did that. But, you know, I think that's really cool. It's gonna make the Mac you know, hopefully a whole lot better. So, you know, there's some great iPad apps out there. There's one, actually, a podcast editing app called Fairite, which, you know, is really good, but it's an iPad only, which if I'm you know, they're bound to release a Mac version now. So I look forward to that. You know, and vice versa, hopefully it means that some of the Mac stuff people will recreate, and as part of doing that, they're now on iPad. So I think it's a really good move. You know, as a developer, I'm really curious about it. I'm going to probably play around. I think they're also allowed you to make watch apps with native interface, which, you know, that if you imagine the way you create an interface for the watch currently is kind of dragging and dropping into grids, and you're kind of limited in where you can put stuff, whereas this is giving you full control, you know, from what I've seen at least, to just draw whatever you want, which will improve the watch apps as well. So I'm going to probably have a play around with that over the next few weeks. So yeah, you know, they announced, you know, getting really techy here, but Swift UI, which is powering a lot of this by the looks of it, which is a new way of creating these interfaces, like a modern way of doing that, which again I'm quite keen to explore, even though I should probably just work on actually adding functionality, but you know, I can't help myself. So that's all we have time for today. Please listen to the after show where we'll be discussing the WWDC jackets.
Guys, we haven't talked about the dub jacket yet.
Of course.
Well, maybe this can be the after show.
Have we all seen the jacket?
There's a couple, I think, isn't there? Well, I did a bit of research on eBay. We could do a little quiz here now if you've got time. So firstly, there was quite a few jackets from previous years, but I found some of the pin badges from, they were sealed from the 20...
From this year.
Well, it said from the 2017/18 WWDC. I don't know what that means. It must be one of those 2 years. Yeah, I'm guessing it was in 17, because then that sort of tech sort of carries over for, you know, till this time the following year. So, how much do you think was the buy it now for a setup? I think there was four badges.
So, what are the badges first?
I haven't got them up. I've just got the price written on my notes app on my phone. But they're just tiny. They're tiny little pin badges, little metal sort of enamel.
Is this in pounds or dollars?
Pounds.
And it's a batch price, is it? Not individual prices?
Yeah. The four together in like...
£100 I'll go for it.
Okay, Kish?
Oh, I'm going to go 50.
Dom, you're the winner, mate. And well,
was it?
Yeah.
Was it
459 pounds 22?
What?
Whoa. Yep. Okay.
Well, I suppose
they've
got to recoup some of that £1,600.
So going on to this year's jacket, the 2019 jacket. What's the buy it now price, you think, for one of those?
Oh. So they're already on eBay, are
they? Yeah. There's one on eBay already.
£850.
I'm gonna go with £1,000. No, I can't be that much.
The badges have fooled you. £711.80. Very that's precise ridiculous. Amount for a buy it now, but yeah. That's certainly someone there hoping to get some of their money back, I think.
Someone needs a very specific amount of money.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It does make me want to just go now to WWDC and then try and recoup the cash, because...
I'm a big fan of this jacket, more so the blue over the red. You know, reversible jacket, cool design. The inverse is just black, so it's more discreet. I think it looks quite good.
Yeah, I think it looks sick. I like it.
Thanks for listening to this special episode of Dev Brood. As always, you can follow me on micro.blog at DOMZ, that's DOMZ. You can also email us podcast@devbrood.com.